Welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-host, teacher and socialist Andy Lipson, and community organizer and socialist Kenny Cepeda. We are online at what-s-left.webnode.com. A little housekeeping here, please subscribe, rate, review, and share your favorite episode wherever you found this episode, and turn on your notification to receive our episodes, to be alerted about our episodes. Thank you. Today, we will be discussing the recent restrictions that California has to go under our governor, Gavin Newsom's order. It started, I think, if you both can help me here, over the weekend, right?
Well, technically Monday morning, but yeah, because that it affected our work, you know, that's what we know. They had a press conference on Friday, and they say, they said by the basically Sunday night, because the curfew started at 10 p.m. Because we had a curfew before the stay-at-home orders were given in the Bay Area first, because the San Francisco Bay Area counties kind of beat the state. I don't even know if the state has made a mandate yet. Shut down.
California state, yes.
Okay. That's my understanding, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is due to the rise in cases and the limited limited capacity of ICU facilities for people since the Thanksgiving week. And so I hope that we'll have a lively discussion about this. From what I understand is that restaurants will now have to do takeout as we were doing in March. Most of the restrictions are to be like what they were in March.
Right.
Unfortunately, museums are now closed. I know that because I received a message, and it's really sad. So they took a hit. So now, they're closed, as well as if there is any indoor activity that has to be done. It used to be at 25% capacity. Now it's at 20%. What else? I'm blanking out.
I mean, there's been, again, closing of a number of businesses that might have been open before, salons. Again, a number of the smaller businesses are going to find themselves closed. Bars or certain size restaurants, like you said, all they could do is take out. Churches, only outdoor services. A pretty big restriction on people gathering. Like, you can only kind of be with your people you live with outside generally. And there's big restrictions on people meeting anyone else who isn't in your house right now.
That's right. Yeah.
And so those are some of the ones that I know about. Again, it's to me, it's very restrictive. Like, and very much like it's a lockdown. I don't know, Kenny, do you know anything? That's it for the details of that. But I also think we should talk about what's the bar that made this take place.
And how are the colors, you know, decided? How is that determined?
Yeah. Well, I looked into that, and the thing that I saw, first of all, there's two things. There's the ICU capacity, right? Across the Bay Area, across California, if the ICU capacity was less than 15%, right? So you were 85% filled and only 15% left. If it got below that, then okay, that would trigger a kind of a lockdown situation. And of course, it's not that way all across California. The San Joaquin Valley has an ICU, like 4% ICU availability, but the Bay Area has a 21% ICU availability. So that's one thing to know. So and Northern California has a much higher ICU availability, maybe almost 30%. But again, the lockdown still includes the Bay Area. I don't know about Northern California. And the other thing is what gets the purple rate is like, if you have more than 8% positive tests for all the people being tested over a week period. And they said if there's more than seven daily new cases per 100,000 people. Then that's considered, then they're calling COVID widespread under those conditions. So it's an ICU trigger and a level at which COVID is around. More than 8% positive tests for all people being tested in any county, or 7 per 100,000 new cases per week on average. Which again, to me,
this is, I should just mention, in the midst of the California has tallied more than 1.3 million cases, that the state broke its record on Friday, with more than 25,000 cases in a single day.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, it's there's a lot of people in California, and
yeah,
we also know about the fatality. 6 million. Right, the fatality rate of this thing is very low. Like, it's like, again, if you're older, if you're above 70, it can get very grim, or it can be harder. It can be up to 4%, 5% fatality rate. But you know, if you're lower than 70, the chances of you surviving are very high, particularly if you're healthy. So they're locking that down under these. I just wanted to say that these are the circumstances under which they're doing the lockdown.
Yeah.
And again, me just questioning, it's also, at least in my experience, reason to question those numbers, you know, because like, for example, one of my friends who had COVID early on was tested, and then they couldn't find her in the system. So she had to tell them she had COVID. And then she got tested in two different sites. And so I don't know how these things are accounted for, but, you know, obviously like the data can be corrupted in different ways. And just going back to that, you know, 7 per 100,000, that's basically one family, right? Getting COVID a week. If a family of seven gets COVID, then we're in purple according for that, right? From what you said.
That's correct. And we're not talking about deaths here. We're talking about getting COVID. I mean, the other thing to know is, like, they've known that the hospitals are going to start to be filled up a little bit more. This happens almost every season here across the country due to the fact that it's flu season. In fact, in 2018, California hospitals got hit very hard. They had to build field hospitals for all the flu cases that came in just 2 years ago. So to me, like, a first question I have to ask is, they knew this was coming. They knew that ICU beds might get lower just by the fact that it's flu season and people are going to have issues. So wouldn't you, in order to avoid a lockdown, wouldn't you actually like a month ago or 2 months ago, wouldn't you start to build capacity for ICU and prepare for this moment? It's just, I do think there's a reason for this lockdown, but I don't think the reasons we're being given are it. Like, I think they're creating a situation so that they can do a lockdown. That's my feeling.
I mean, and also, I mean, this might be a little more just like, what do you call, like, gossip or, but prior to the lockdown, Newsom and London Breed, the mayor of San Francisco, were caught in a scandal because they were having dinner at a fancy-ass restaurant celebrating birthdays. You know, these are people who know the information, right? Like, they know how bad situations are, but they were caught having fancy-ass dinners, you know, in a Michelin-starred restaurant with people outside their bubbles, celebrating a birthday with a socialite in the city, you know, the people that bankroll their campaigns. Just to give you, you know, a sense maybe of, you know, what's in their mind, you know, like, if they're so anxious about this thing, and they have more access to information than we do, supposedly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was reading and hearing as well. I think today there came out a report I was hearing on Global News Podcast, where college students are, there's a high rate of college students that are feeling very isolated and lonely and dismayed because of the lack of socialization or their college experience being denied to them, which I think is valid and buried in all of this when I listen to KPFA. I really like their programming. I really do. And I love Upfront in the morning, Edward Tickert, Brian Edward Tickert. But there was a part where he was, there was a part where every Monday, Dr. Schwartz or something like that, some last name, he calls in to give an analysis and his commentary about the confinement, COVID, and et cetera. And there was a moment where he was talking about how this is affecting students and this is affecting the mental health of people. And immediately, the presenter, Brian Edward Tickert, cut him off and said, well, let's just remember that teachers could potentially get COVID. But I thought Dr. Schwartz was on the right path. He was talking about mental health and how there's a need for students to go to back to school. And he was also talking about the Academy of Pediatrics. And Brian Edward Tickert cut him off immediately and said, well, he wanted to steer the attention to focus on what teachers are demanding, which is that the teachers feel unsafe going back to school. And maybe it's because of Dr. Schwartz not being able to redirect himself back to say, I'm going to finish what my thought is, but he just didn't even finish about mental health. And that was the first I thought, you know, I have a lot of respect for Brian Edward Tickert. But in that moment, I felt as if he was controlling the narrative for how the conversation around confinement, COVID, it went. And now looking back, because I listen religiously, I haven't really heard anything opposing or any pro or for reopening of the schools in the programming Upfront. And something I think I should write as as a cult listener of them. So I guess what I'm trying to say is it's the news, the mainstream news, and even what we may call independent or liberal or independent alternative media that is also just completely focused on cases, rising numbers. And even there's now on Facebook where they're talking about the vaccines, there are posts where they say, will you take the vaccine? It's sort of this new post that I don't know if you both have been seen. And I don't want to put yes or no. I don't want to put it, but it's almost encouraging everyone. And now Facebook will come as well to discredit or take down posts that are anti-vaccine, and there's a lot of criticism on vaccine hesitancy. It seems the label is being used to categorize a group of people that are now uneducated, misguided. They don't know, and I didn't see that level of dismissal, or at least from my conversations with people who lived in the 60s when they were anti-vaxxers, hippies, liberals, were sort of encouraged and to discuss that the government is not to be trusted and that vaccines are to be weary of. I mean, they weren't complete anti-vaxxers, but they certainly were very weary of them. And people didn't dismiss that. It was a very left-leaning position. And now it seems everyone has just on the left, which is supposed to be critical of government, which is supposed to be one of the most respected, you know, in San Francisco, you control the government, they bow down to us and we fight against it, against the man, right? Or Big Brother, and yes to Edward Snowden and yes to Julian Assange and all this anti-racist rhetoric and fight. But we should just trust completely what the government says when it comes to vaccines. And I And I was going to Rainbow. I'm sorry, I'm going on this track, but it's the last thing I was. I was going to Rainbow, and oh, what was it yesterday? And I was doing my shopping, and I, the cashier spoke to me, and we were talking, and I said to her, you know, I was talking about working from home and everything, and she said, well, hopefully with the vaccine, we'll be able to do things differently. And I just didn't say anything, but the cashier. Next to this, the cashier I was talking to, she said, and she looked over and she said, I hope that you read the side effects of those vaccines at the CDC. I never thought someone would say that. And I thought, what are you for or against? And she was afraid to say if she's for or against, even at a place like Rainbow, which is a very hippy-dippy liberal place. And she just said, I'm just saying you should read the side effects. And I quickly said, I have hesitations around the vaccine, and she felt safe enough to say, yes, I have strong hesitations. And there was this moment where we could share hesitation, sympathy. It's hard to live in an era where you are being told to do, you know, the mass, everyone wants to do this. And if we are to, I said this last, I think, if we respect the scientists, I think we need a growing number of scientists to peer review the stuff that's coming out. And there isn't right now, like we have a consensus. This is my opinion that I think that just like we have for climate change, an IPCC, I think IPCC, what is it? IPCC. Yeah. We should also have a consensus, which I imagine it'll get political, but not even that. We don't even have that. So that's what I take of this. And I know sometimes, you know, I'm not joking, actually. I do love going to the museums, but I know you two smile or laugh about it. But the arts or nature or hikes or things, places, these are, you know, some of the things that make up our humanity. We need to have spaces where we can congregate, where we can be together and socialize. And the arts provides a venue for that. And I do think that closing down museums, as much as we can discuss and debate about where, like how elitist or institutionally, that's not really, doesn't allow the accessibility, which I know it's trying, and you know, they're free here in San Francisco and over the weekends for families.
And theaters, right? So
even and theaters and well. Places too. I think these places are quite large enough. I mean, sometimes I criticize the museums for not being able to put up more art because they have very large walls for one piece of art sometimes. But anyhow, these are very large places. You can have, I was just there 2 weeks ago, you can have a lot of people there and be socially distant if we wanted to. But, you know, everything's being closed down, and I imagine this will affect the psyche of a lot of people. That was a long rant.
Not Walmart, Best Buy, or Target.
Right. Right?
Yep.
And these small businesses. And then I was looking at a YouTube video where a woman whose small business, I think in Los Angeles, she had tried to comply with the outdoor dining. So she had invested into this outdoor dining space, taking part of the sidewalk, building whatever infrastructure, the structure that she needed to for her outdoor dining space. And then finally, when she was done, they shut down dining at the restaurants. And so she was really frustrated and crying. I think I will share it. And she was just upset. And she said, now when I finally invested all of this money into trying to comply for restaurants to have outdoor dining, I'm now, my business is shutting. So what, yeah, we can't be that, demanding restaurants to be shutting down businesses.
It was not just that, but there was a movie studio that was shooting a thing that had tons of tents, and they were allowed to do it because they have connections. So that was the thing that she was so upset about, is that they had shut down her business unsafe. And then right across the street are a bunch of tents. This was a movie theater shooting a movie, and those people were allowed to do it.
Yeah,
and you know, I work in a restaurant. You know, I'm a manager at a restaurant. That's my job, my paying job, in San Francisco. And we went through all that same, you know, the same thing. The thousands of dollars, probably $15,000 to get heaters, to build a parklet, to get permits, to decorate, so it's welcoming. And yes, so this happened again. While at the same time, you know, they were selling tickets for airlines during the holidays, right? Criticizing it, but allowing people to fly, right? So the airlines were fine, you know. And yeah, you know, like, and there's this myth that everyone's losing. You know, at least in the restaurant industry, restaurants are struggling. A lot of restaurants are. But you know who's getting bigger? And they just went live. They had their IPO today, DoorDash. DoorDash bought Caviar. You know, Uber, they bought Grubhub, I believe. So they're cornering the market. You know, these are tech companies making money, squeezing small businesses, squeezing workers in the restaurant industry, basically making temp workers out of everyone. You know, I work with someone who worked in the union, unionized at a hotel. She was a building rep. She's badass. She's very intelligent. She doesn't buy this bullshit. But yet she has no other option but to do DoorDash. And now that's saturated. So everyone's kind of desperate. Now everyone's, my income is down to maybe 3/5 of what I made pre-COVID. And now everyone's like cutting days, trying to survive. But again, not everyone's losing. Okay. Grubhub, DoorDash, Caviar, they're getting bigger. And now there is a tablet, 5 tablets in every restaurant. So that's the future of the industry.
Yeah, I want to highlight this. I mean, Eduardo, you talked about the vaccine and how I think the vaccine does figure in this, and I'll talk about that later. But I think the first thing I want to talk about is I think this lockdown, it's about control, but it also is about making the U.S. economy scream, a certain sector of it scream, for the small business, for workers and things like that. Make it scream. And I think there's an actual interest in it for a number of reasons. But I saw the two most recent headlines from The Economist, one today and one yesterday. Here's the one I saw today, said this. The headline said, companies have raised more capital in 2020 than ever before in the history of the United States. All right. And the next headline that I saw was the other one. This was the day before. This pandemic will give way to an era of rapid productivity growth. And then the subheading was, businesses have adopted new processes and technologies and there are signs that this may pay off. So the profits for some of the biggest capitalists have just gone through the roof. This goes back to the stimulus package, to the CARES package, where there was that $500 billion that underwrote $4.5 trillion. And that was all going to be used to buy up distressed assets. Well, guess where the distressed assets should be found right now? It's in all these little small little places that are having to sell up. There's been a report that 60% of the businesses that have closed are not going to be returning. The small businesses are not going to be returning. So this is intentional. It is helping the United States as a capitalist country to do this because it's allowing the biggest capitalist centers to centralize capital. And they're going to fuse with the state. This is what Operation Warp Seed is out. This will allow them to compete with China. So make no bones about it. Things getting worse for workers is not things getting worse for capitalists. This is definitely getting better for the capitalist class. The thing is that there's another piece now. I actually think the capitalist class has possibly solved a riddle that they've been worried about, which is if we push these workers too hard, we're going to have a revolution, right? If we push them too hard, if we squeeze them too much, we're going to have a revolution. That's what history shows us. And I want to read the title of this article that I found that tells me that they have an angle on this. And I want to see if you guys maybe. So this is in a high school. It's a high school in Texas. It says a high school in Texas opens a grocery store for struggling families where good deeds are accepted as payment. Okay. And here's the deal. Basically, you have a room in the high school where they have food and things like that. And families can get access to that. But if your son or daughter who happens to be a poor, you know, from a poor family, does good deeds in the school, does extra dues, they can get extra credit so they can get more goods from the store. And that credit is going to be given to them by teachers, by principals, things like this. So what we're looking at is a social credit system that they're going to be putting in place. So that basically they are going to monetize or essentially turn poverty into a control mechanism. That is, the poorer you get, the more incentive you have for behaving so you get access to the goods, because you can't get it through a job. You'll get it through a UBI. You'll get it through unemployment. You'll get it through things like this, where there's free stores in schools to get you free access to this. If you behave well, and if the teacher dings you on your thing and gives you a like on Facebook, then maybe it happens. That's where we're headed. And this is some of the things that this is how I think they think they can get away with it. Because I know the capitalist class knows history. But I think part of this thing is this whole digital world that's being built, the fourth industrial revolution. And this is where the vaccines come in, for all of us having to get the vaccine so we can be in the biomedical system, having our biomedical data, allowing us to be part of that system of being monitored. You know, well, we want to know what's happening with the vaccine, but you actually want to know what's happening with us. That's going to be connected to having us all, like, as Allison said, not just an internet of things, but an internet of bodies, and being controlled through that. So I think this, what's happening with the lockdown, is all about helping the capitalists, all about making the economy scream for some, and using our desperation to push us towards the vaccine, so we can say, open up the economy, I'll take the vaccine, and then we're locked into a biomedical digital system. And these are the sorts of things that I think are going to be increasingly in play before us.
There was an announcement recently, and what, speaking of a credit system, social credit system, where there was an option to receive smartphone notifications for contact tracing, as well as a new app that is being rolled out in California called, I think it's California Notify, that from what I put down in my own document here, as a reminder that I wanted to mention, that relies on short-range Bluetooth radios to determine when two devices have been near one another for more than 15 minutes.
Right.
So this is more of that digital interface that it's attempted to be imposing onto people, and in the name of security. So I imagine that we will have more surveillance. Again, as I mentioned earlier, this is the left that was very critical of the Bush years when they came out, that there was a massive surveillance. And then Edward Snowden as well was praised for his exposure, for the exposure of the surveillance, NSA surveillance. But most liberals are fine with now downloading this app and allowing themselves to be traced, and it'll make it easier for those of us that don't want to be traced. In the name of security, the majority wants it, and so there'll be mandates, and that's what I am fearing. As well as with the vaccine, I do believe it should be an option if people want to. And I imagine that this will also lead to mandated vaccines as well.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to come from the government, because we all live in mini dictatorships at work. You know, like, for me, they imposed on us, like, answering questions with our, you know, the generic, like, temperature, sore throat, all that stuff, before we were able to clock in. They also strongly encourage getting tested regularly. And so there, you know, businesses will be able to make decisions on whether they can allow you to work if you do these things or not. And you basically don't have a choice. You won't have a choice in some of these situations.
Yeah. I have to read this article, or a fellow teacher sent me a YouTube thing. She was like, wait a second. I hear they're talking about when you go back to school, they're going to be doing regular COVID testing with the swipe test. She goes, but the data that they get, whatever they get, they're not sharing it with the hospital. They're sharing it with human resources. Like, why is that? You know, I was like, yeah, they're not going to do anything for me. You know, so this very much is building a system of control. And one thing that's never even asked, like, I probably should. It's like, look, we just went through this election and everyone's talking about Trump and being a fascist and he's gonna be a dictator and things like this, which I honestly think is nonsense. I mean, he's a bad politician. He's like Obama and Clinton and Bush before him. He sucks. But Governor Newsom just declared that we can't go out of our houses and congregate. Now, did he ask anybody in the legislature did he get an authority through them to do such a thing? I'm just wondering, do you think he did? He didn't. He didn't. Like, that's one of the things. Like, there was no consultation with any legislative body in Sacramento for him as a monarch, essentially, to declare, I'm going to put this state in this situation. Like, now there's a reason for that. It does provide cover for the legislature to allow the governor to be a monarch, you know? But this, like, it's amazing to me that we just spent all this time worrying about a fascist in the White House, and we have one, like, literally a dictator in California here, and everyone's just kind of, oh, I guess so. I actually think, in terms of exercising dictatorial powers, Governor Newsom has done much more than Trump. I mean, Trump certainly pushed forward the National Development Act, which basically allowed the state and corporations to fuse. He was lauded by that, by Bernie Sanders and the Democrats for doing that, but he did do that. I would call that moving in that direction of dictatorial powers. But Trump didn't tell me I can't leave my house. Governor Newsom did, you know? And for a left that has been talking and so concerned about fascism, it's certainly lost the person right under their nose who's doing this stuff. And the effects of these lockdowns for California, let's be clear. And if you look at a map, actually, there's a number of states that have now followed suit, okay, across the country. But if you shut down California economy, then you actually have a big impact on the U.S. economy. And they know that. And this is going to be a giant boon for Silicon Valley. So Silicon Valley is loving this. They're basically using their control of California to essentially control the entire country. And of course, the politicians are in favor of it, but it's all moving their way. And lockdown is a big feature of that.
And what happens in California usually determines what happens in the rest of the country.
Yeah, like they talked about the recovery in 2008. One in seven of the jobs that got created that was part of how they monitored the recovery from 2008 was coming from California. Most of the recovery was seen in California. So California is now leading the charge in essentially shutting down the U.S. economy. And it's intentional because it's allowing the middle section of the economy to be wiped out so it can be bought up on the cheap by the largest capitalists. It's entirely intentional and they know it's happening. And yes, it's also driving people to beg for a vaccine, to beg for the state to help them, and then say and put us in, lock us into a cycle of poverty that makes us even more controlled because we're saying, I'll be good if you give me extra credits at the food pantry.
And you know, there's an estimate, I think, of maybe 19 million people may lose their homes. I don't know, you know, but just as a reference, roughly 10 million people lost their homes in the 2008 housing crisis. So whether it's, you know, close to 2008 or not, it's going to be a lot of people. And again, those distressed assets are going to be bought by some, you know, by corporations and stuff.
I suppose it's, I mean, what do we do as a way to organize folks from being tricked is, I guess I wanted to know what ideas. It's difficult to hold conversations with people to organize, to go back to school, to create a strike, or to fight for not just a better living wage, but to fight for workers' rights, to be able to control what we do as labor. If this is happening, how does one come out of this haze or this fog of,
yeah,
it's like, you know, like I think, imagine it the way that I see fantasy films. I don't know where this is, where there was a haze that went into the majority that made or tricked them to sleep or something. It seems to be effective the way that the government is being able to use people's fears to not organize and to do as they say. And the left is caught up in it. I'm and the right, more, less so maybe, no? Mm-hmm. Maybe less so, who knows? I'm not too sure. I haven't really felt in those. I don't have the feelers out there.
The right will be more critical of the tyranny of lockdown and the things. But I would say still caught up in the national myth of freedom from, give me back Thomas Jefferson and George Washington, and I want to get my country back. It's like, but at the very least, they're critical, and I agree with them, critical of these lockdowns. There are much more sections of the right are that way. The left is literally begging for lockdown. And this is why you ran into that, what you ran into in Democracy Now. I mean, I'm looking at socialist websites that are literally not even talking about California's lockdown and even saying, wait, New York is coming out of lockdown. They shouldn't. They got to go back in lockdown. It's like, what the hell?
And I've also listened to a lot of like left-leaning podcasts, and they take this, the COVID data or news as a gospel. You know, there is no real criticism of it. You know, and I feel like we've been set up for this throughout the Trump administration, because, you know, here is this anti-science guy, right? Like the biggest threat, you know, someone who's categorically different than everyone else. And then being questioning science now, or questioning what supposed experts say, puts you in that situation where you're dismissed on the left. You're dismissed as a, you know, conspiracy theorist or a Republican.
Or an anti-vaxxer. That's like right now, terrorists and anti-vaxxer are, I don't know, ISIS or anti-vaxxer, which is worse? ISIS is old news. Now it's anti-vaxxer. I think anti-vaxxer is now worse than ISIS.
Yeah.
And that's actually something that I was thinking about, you know, like in the 90s, like the Russian threat like kind of died, right? Because they're, you know, and then terrorism became the worst thing that could happen, you know, because of this big event that created fear and anxiety, and they shut things out in our throat. And now, you know, terrorism, you know, white, like domestic terrorism was killing more people. So we have this big enemy now that, you know, that is a world threat. And, you know, the U.S. is coming to the rescue because those Chinese, they're only 86% efficient, you know, with their vaccine, because Pfizer is 92%. You know, you see these narratives being played out.
The common cold.
Yeah. And so, you know, there are these things. I almost think of this now as a, like, you know, like the race, space race, you know, Sputnik and all that era, yeah. You know, as to who gets there first, you know, and is the vaccine, biotech, you know, and like old tech racing. That's where the race is playing out.
Yeah. And anyone that is an anti-vaxxer is seen as ignorant, stupid, and I know I have those feelings sometimes. but that it doesn't help when they're saying very outlandish things, you know. Like this is just my opinion, you know. When it, you know, saying it caused cancer and whatever brain and differences, mutation, and I don't know. Sometimes it goes really weird. Sometimes Andy and Kenny, that it's hard to be aligned with those people. But the reason why I wanted to mention is because I will say that there is a strong reason within, especially people of color communities, to be hesitant about vaccines because of what we discussed some time ago, which is being used as guinea pigs for to test out products, no? And I wanted to share with people that on KPFA 2 weeks ago on Friday, there was a special on Friday where they shared about the history of people of color, Native Americans and Latinos and Blacks being used in different times, like one for Blacks with syphilis time where they were used. And a lot of them were made to sign off things. And it gave me a strong, I already knew this, that, you know, in Africa that pharmaceuticals were used to try to test out. But I just feel as if people really understood the history of people being used as guinea pigs, would be more sympathetic to understanding why there's a strong hesitancy. So I'll share that in the link in the description box below. But that's not so much because people are ignorant. People have very strong, valid reasons why they are hesitant.
Well, literally during our episode, Brandy sent me, because we were talking about this earlier, she sent me an article titled Anaphylactic Reaction to Pfizer Vaccine. So the first shot, which is not even the one that induces the worst response, has already had people who have suffered from certain allergies going into almost, you know, a kind of anaphylactic shock. So now here's my question. Will there be a team of lawyers going after Pfizer or Moderna when these cases hit?
I imagine, no.
Well, they won't, because in March, the U.S. gave all of these companies liability freedom from any sort of legal claim to, oh, you messed with us. Basically, they were all freed of liability back in March. So that's pretty convenient.
I didn't even know this piece. So in March, you're saying if there's any adverse side effects.
The federal government is already saying no one can go after you.
I have a friend in biotech who said that they're literally rolling out, you know, the red carpet for this thing, you know. I think that's very symbolic, you know, and why would they do that, you know?
And I mean, I don't want to go too far into that because we're going back to the last week's episode, which, you know, which itself was throttled on YouTube. But I don't want to miss the fact that the lockdowns in California and the global lockdowns have had an impact that people, it's a little hard to get the information, but it's out there. I want to cite a few things about the impact for starting from March. Now, these numbers are coming from March. From the Well-Being Trust, and this is in the United States, it is estimated that 75,000 people have died due to alcohol, drug abuse, or suicide in the United States. Okay. And the Lancet reported that the World Food Program says that world hunger will double to 265 million, or 265 million more people facing acute food insecurity. And 140 million more people thrown into poverty, and 125,000 children across the globe will die from malnutrition as a result of these, what's happened to the economy and the lockdown. Now everyone's going to put that on COVID, but it's not. These are explicit policies done by our government, by the European government, and by the Chinese government to recover. This is all about recovering from the crash that was coming, that we had talked about before when we talked about this. It was back in February, and they've been able to do it. And they're look what the economists are saying now. They're going to have record productivity, right? Because they've been able to reorganize the economy. And that's exactly how capitalists get out of a crisis. You've got to ramp up productivity. But who are they getting it out of? The middle class, right? The small shop owners and the working class. And guess what? Teachers think they're getting off free, and we're going to be safe in our classrooms. Guess what? We already know that California is $42 billion in the hole in the revenues it's collected. And Gavin Newsom knows that. He knows that they're starving the state, and what they're going to come back around in a year, and they're going to say, your pensions have to be cut, your wages have to be cut, we're going to have to do something because we don't have any revenue. And then, again, more desperation and more control. Because the more desperate you are, as long as they've got you in their little system, then they can say, okay, which way are you going now? And if you go the right way, we'll give you a little cheese and keep you afloat. But if you go the wrong way, we cut the cheese off. You're fucked. And we're not going to let you congregate, because that's the last thing we want to see, because we don't want India happening here, and we don't want what's going on in France, and we certainly don't want to see any more of that yellow vest bullshit. And honestly, you're absolutely right, Eduardo. We are going to have to get over it. Like, we are going to have to get over this fear of each other. If we do not, it's going to get much more frightening unless we get over our fear of each other.
Yeah, I don't see any way to organize like this. No. As you also showed us last when you just clicked off. But it is a spell. That was the word I was looking for earlier. It is a spell. I have difficulties imagining a way for you all to be able to organize a revolution if you can't even get people to understand that this fear is being implemented to halt that revolution. I find it very difficult to even find any leftist, socialist, libertarian leftists, literature, articles, anything to be able to support or to share maybe some counter explanations or what we're sharing here. So I think what we're doing here is quite vital, even though it is risky. And I'm very afraid that we won't have a channel sometimes. But I do think now, having changed my position slowly over time, which wasn't very strong, as I would say, maybe some of the people who are advocating for a complete shutdown and confinement, no, but has evolutionized throughout this entire thing. And especially after Allison shared with us, that was a big one for me.
Yeah.
So what does it look like for the labor movement? No.
I do want to say that we have, like, after that, you remember the episode we did with AJ and the reopening schools, the case for reopening schools. Mm-hmm. She and I and some others have started a small group of educators trying to work together to push for reopening schools. But we're also trying, like, one of the things we talked about is we're not a large group, you know, maybe right now 7 or 8, 9 teachers. There's more teachers than that that feel this way, but the people who actually do something right now is small. And whatever we've put our voices out there, we definitely get howled at by our colleagues who are just like outraged. But we do see the need to actually meet in the same physical space. Like, it's not good enough for us to meet here on Zoom. And all of us recognize that need, not because suddenly we're going to get stronger, but we have to overcome that. Like, we're going to have to overcome this division. I went to a little mini action that I went with 3 or 4 colleagues to, like, do my class on in front of 555 Franklin instead of here in this room. And to be honest, to be around them was a little awkward. I haven't been around people like in that kind of environment. Like, I knew AJ, but the other people I didn't know as well, it's going to take getting over being around people again to see them in actually 3-dimensional space. So we're training kids to look at each other this way. I've had 50 years to get used to actually seeing people in 3 dimensions. Right now we're training kids to see people in the same way they see their characters on Minecraft and Fortnite.
I know what you're talking about, Andy. My neighbor, there's an adolescent that lives just at the corner here, and she rides her skateboard right in front of the house. And she's the only white girl in this neighborhood. Well, there's other white people, but they're older mostly. And she's the only white girl, and she's the only girl on a skateboard. And she's been there for hours all day from the morning and last week. And I just said to her, do you want to join us for dinner? Kahana, like, I didn't want to say, because I didn't want to come off as a predator to her. But then when she saw me and Kahanu, you know, when she saw me and my nephew, and then she saw us, and I just, do you want to come over? And she was so awkward. But then she later said to me, I feel so, thank you so much for inviting me. I was so lonely being at home. And I felt so bad. It really hit something for me. But anyhow, I just thought of what you said. People get awkward. And how are we going, and our adolescents who are not used to being around who already have self-esteem issues, who already have, you know, self-image issues, who already have low confidence issues, you know, not sure of themselves. And I remember being an adolescent myself and wondering so much about what other people thought. And now it's affecting people. So yeah, anyhow, I just got, something came up for me when you said that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's amazing what you did. And I know that you risked being seen, blah, blah, blah. But I hope more of us start doing things like this.
Yeah.
Because we're going to need to break through that.
We're so worried that fascism was coming. And, you know, I think it's here. It's been here.
California Uber Alles.
Let's hope that something hopeful next year happens.
Well, maybe when Biden gets there, I think things will really pick up.
He might be mandating for. He's gonna mandate masks for 100 days, I think.
Son of a.
Speaking of which, Biden, I just wanted to say that there are people, war hawks, that being appointed right now to his cabinet, the Secretary of State.
Yeah.
And other people that are being appointed.
Oh yeah.
Even what's his name? Kenny Sean King.
He's such a liberal, like talking head. Yeah, but yeah, even him.
Well, Sean King even came out saying about something that no matter if they are, he said this sometime in this week. He said it was treading very carefully around identity politics. He said we need to not appoint or be worried about the skin color of what these appointees will be, because there are many people who are of various colors who will come after us, even if they are black or women. And he was treading very carefully around it, but it is an identity politics issue. And he was just saying that even the most appointed, the person appointed for some military defense thing is the first African American appointee, he still has a history of doing lots of horrible things in Syria. So anyhow, I just thought I'd share that with both of you, that Biden isn't the change that people are expecting.
And I also want to make sure people don't get their news from Sean King. You know, I target him every week. Like, he's such a talking head, like liberal talking head. He's a Bernie supporter. He defends him. You know, it's disgusting, like, honestly. But it also, if you want an example of what I believe is, like, a perfect example of liberal identity politics, go look at him.
Yeah. And what's interesting, as we talked about fascism and dictatorship, apparently Sean King is much more afraid of criticizing Biden, Kamala Harris, and his defense appointments picks than he is of criticizing Trump. So what's that about? So the fascist, you can go out and just rip into him, but the liberal Democrat president, you got to be frightened of? What's going on here, folks?
It's not easy, but maybe we'll have a different perspective from Trump supporters next week, no?
Yes, that's right. That's right. Well done.
I'm ready for them. Anyhow, we'll see what they think.
Yeah.
Well, that does it for this week's episode. What's Left is a weekly political podcast that's channel challenging the mainstream left. We post information about our topics and our guests on the episode notes, wherever you found this episode, or on our blog at what-s-left.webnode.com. You can find past episodes to this podcast slash channel there and connect with us. I remind folks that if you like anything you have heard here, please share your favorite episodes, rate, review, subscribe, and turn on your notifications to any of our 6 platforms on Spotify, iTunes, Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, BitChute, or YouTube. And if you would like to give us feedback about something you've heard, or suggest something for us to cover, contact us to our blog. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-hosts Kenny Cepeda and Andy Lipson. See you next time. iPod doesn't hold. The thing doesn't hold anymore.
Because you broke it?
Because it fell.
Because you broke it.
You know, it's interesting. In English, in Spanish, you say se quebró. It broke. In English, you usually say you broke it.
Actually, it's a whole thing. Like, and they even say that it affects how you remember things. You know, like, yeah, language.
Yeah.
So in Spanish you lie, and in English we tell the truth.
No, in Spanish you just say what happened. You don't blame. You just say, yeah, "Oh, it broke
my brain."
In English, you condemn people.
Exactly. This is the English is the language of the Inquisition.
I'm telling you, you're trying to make me feel bad about something.
No, I mean, wasn't that the one that was already had a problem with it?
Yeah.